You're listening to the Option Alpha podcast from OptionAlpha.com, where we show you how to make smarter trades, learn how the stock market really works, and generate consistent monthly income. Now, your host and head trader at OptionAlpha.com, Kirk Duplessis.
Hey everyone, this is Kirk here again from Option Alpha, working every single week to make this the most popular investing podcast offered online because it's based on one thing and one thing only, and that's helping you guys make smarter trades. So again, thank you so much for tuning in today. On today's show, we are going to be talking through the put-call ratio, trying to understand what the ratio is, how we can use it correctly, if we should be using it at all as part of our trading strategy. And so I think I want to go through a lot of this today on the weekly show. I figured that this topic really deserves a little bit more attention than a traditional daily podcast because we do get a lot of questions about put call ratios and we get a lot of emails from people asking if we use it and if we do, how we use it or what levels we should be looking at. So I want to dive deep into this today on the weekly podcast. As always, if you want additional resources and links as we go through this or some of the reviews and synopsis of the put call ratio, it'll all be available on the website on the show notes page, optionalpha.com/show166. Again, that's just the number 166, optionalpha.com/show166. All right, so let's dive into this by first trying to get an understanding and an idea of how the put-call ratio is determined, how it's basically calculated. It's actually very simple, just very simple division that you have to do. You actually don't even have to do it. It's done for you. You can use a lot of services that do it. YCharts does it. Thinkorswim does it. Many other brokerage platforms do it for you. But all you basically do is you take the total volume of put options that were traded. You can do it on a daily basis, a weekly basis. Most people look at daily charts or weekly charts with put call ratios, and you divide that number by the total number or the total volume of the call options that were traded. So total volume of put options, total volume of call options. We're talking all strike prices across all different contracts just to try to see how active the markets are. And so we simply take this division and that gets us our weekly or daily put call ratio. Now, when this ratio of put to call volume gets really high, meaning that more puts are being traded relative to calls, then many people lead to believe that this is a sign that the market could potentially go through some sort of a reversal to the upside because people are really, really, really bearish. So people are buying more put options relative to call options, therefore they're buying more protection. Then maybe it's more of a contrarian indicator because usually people are bad at making decisions about where the market's going to go. And so that leads to a reversal to the upside. On the flip side, when the put to call ratio gets really low, meaning that there's not a lot of put options traded relative to call options, or that there's an even amount of put options traded to call options, or less put options traded to call options, then potentially the market is ready for a reversal to the downside. Because now this typically means that people are looking at the put to call volumes and saying, okay, not enough people are fearful. We got too many people that are greedy. The level of fear or protection or hedging that's going on is not as high or as good as it needs to be. And so a lot of people use this as a contrarian view to say, look, if the put to call ratio is really low, then that means that potentially we could be coming into either just flat markets or a market that might reverse and head lower. So my biggest rub initially with the put to call ratio, and I'll start diving into this now that we've gotten kind of the groundwork laid, is that really it only looks at volume, which is just like looking at one side of a coin. So to me, liquid markets and just understanding liquidity for a particular strike price is not just volume. It's not just activity, but it's depth. It's how much open interest there still is in that contract. And put to call ratios only look at volume. Now, I know people recalculate these a bunch of different ways. I'm not going to go into it, but the traditional sense is looked at in volume. And volume is just one way to look at market liquidity and activity. So to paint this picture, I want to look at just a simple example here with volume and open interest. So let's say we're looking at one particular strike and it has open interest of 300 and it has volume on the day of 300. Well, we don't necessarily know if the next day that volume is going to be 300 closing trades in which the open interest goes back to zero. Is it 300 brand new positions in which case open interest goes up by 300 to 600? Or is it just a neutral exchanging of positions where the open interest stays the same because the 300 contracts were just swapped between people in the same market? So just looking at volume by itself in a vacuum, to me doesn't necessarily mean anything really when it comes to put call ratios, because high volume could be that people are getting into it, or could be that people are just closing it. Those could have all been closing orders, which suggests that people maybe have a different assumption about the market than maybe you would have thought on generally looking at put call ratios. The interesting thing about it, though, not to like rub that point too much in, but the interesting thing about put call ratios is that you can generally find time periods where a low put to call ratio is indicative of a market top and a high put to call ratio is indicative of a market bottom. So those things happen for sure. But all the research that I've definitely seen on this and that we've seen in numerous places with put to call ratios, and we'll add a bunch of links and resources to the show notes page, definitely suggests that there's not a lot of congruency between predictive power of the put to call ratio. And I think this is broadly looked at. I haven't seen a lot of research that goes into longer time frames, you know, multiple months, potentially years with major put to call ratio tops and bottoms. But the consensus has been in the investment community that put to call ratios don't really have any meaningful correlation with market predictions in either direction. So does this mean that put to call ratios are completely useless? No, I don't think so. I think that they're actually incredibly useful when it comes to building a broad case for why a market might be overbought, oversold. I think that it's an interesting data point, and I think it's really nothing more than that. And I'll even kind of prove the point here a little bit, because I think when you look at put-to-call ratios for particular stocks, it is interesting to note that, broadly speaking, when we get to these extremes, put-to-call ratios can sometimes also follow this trend in this trajectory. Now, again, does that mean that it always works in all cases? Of course not. Does it mean that it has a ton of predictive power in where things are going to go? No, but it's just another thing that I would look at and say, oh, that's interesting. Like, the market is down and this is, you know, whatever. And all of these readings are showing this, and put-to-call ratio is in this area as well. So I think it's hard to quantify because, you know, a lot of the research that we've seen, you know, it's hard to say like what put to call ratio is really the level that would suggest things are abnormal or that they could reverse. Is it 1.5? Is it 2.0? Is it 3.0? I mean, you know, what are the levels that say, okay, this is where things actually change? I think it's on a more case by case basis. I think if you look at an individual stock and you kind of follow it and you look at the history and you say, okay, this seems to be average and this seems to be kind of above average. So it's interesting to know, maybe it's above average, maybe it's below average right now. It alerts you to what potentially might be going on. I look at it like, you know, the weather forecast, like there's a 30% chance of rain. So maybe it rains, maybe it doesn't, right? And when you look at put to call ratios in conjunction with everything else, you look at it and you say to yourself, okay, all these other indicators are showing that the market's going to reverse. And it just so happens put to call ratio is in that camp too. So, okay, that just, you know, maybe adds and builds to your case. So a couple of ones I want to note and point out. I think it's just interesting to kind of go through these one by one just to show you guys how things have evolved, I guess, in one particular stock. And we're going to use the S&P because it's just the easiest one. So SPY, you can actually do this in Y charts. So if you go to ycharts.com, we'll have a link in the show notes. You can actually put in many of the different ticker symbols that are out there and look at the put to call ratios going back, I think 5 or 6 years at max. And if you want to go back longer and do regressions, you got to sign up for their paid stuff. But it is cool to kind of go back and see different particular data points and where the market was. So right now, today, judging by Thinkorswim's calculation at the moment I'm doing this, put-to-call ratio today on the S&P is 0.971. So almost one-to-one volume for put options versus call options. And if you go back and look at the last 5 years of the S&P, it looks like the average, I didn't do a regression on this, but it looks like the average is around 1.6. 1.6, 1.5 seems to be about the average put-to-call ratio, which means about 1.5 times as many put options are bought than call options. Now, that could make logical sense because a lot of people like to hedge with the S&P. It becomes an easy instrument to hedge, so it could be very easy why people would buy option contracts on the put side to use them as a hedge for their regular portfolio. If you go back to particular dates, in particular, October of 2018 and December of 2018, both had some of the highest put-to-call ratio readings. Put-to-call ratio readings that were over 2, in many cases 2.3, 2.4 on some occasions. So these had some of the highest put-to-call ratio readings. It just so happens that they also ended up being some of the times where the markets actually bottomed out. Now, is that interesting to note? For sure. I think it's incredibly interesting to note. Do we think that this is always the case? definitely not. We don't think that's always the case, right? But it is interesting to note that when this number got elevated to that level, that it happened to coincide broadly, not exactly the same day, but broadly in the range and trajectory of where the markets ended up rallying. Then again, on July 26th of this year was where the markets actually saw one of the lower readings, if we don't even judge today, but one of the lower readings of put-to-call ratios for the S&P, which was 0.93. And that also happened to coincide within a couple days of the market actually reaching its peak pretty much for the year. So that level around like 301 on the S&P is where it was trading. We really haven't been up there in quite a while. In fact, after that, we saw a little bit of a dip and decline. So again, very interesting to note. Is it always going to be the case? No, but it does seem to me like it's one extra thing that you could have kind of in your back pocket and say, okay, I'm just going to check this and see like generally where it's at. It has a little bit of engagement value, I think, for traders. And it builds a little bit more of an awareness factor than anything else. Would I absolutely build like bots on put to call ratios? Probably not, right? But do I think it's a good engagement factor to use? For sure. I think it's really good. So hopefully this helps out. Again, you know, like our assumption on put to call ratio is it's a good tool. It's something that you can look at, but it's by no means anything you should build full-fledged trading strategy off of. It's more of a macro thing. It's more of a directional trend theme style, you know, indicator that you can use and you can glance at from time to time. But I don't look at it every single week. I think it's just oftentimes we get a lot of emails about it and people are sending it over. And so I want to do this podcast just to kind of share my view of how we kind of look at it here at Option Alpha. So hopefully it helps out. As always, if you guys have any other questions, just let us know. Add them in the show notes over at optionalpha.com/show166. Now, before we get into the Trader Q&A segment, like I do every week, I wanted to give a quick shout out to one of our members in our community who left us a review recently on iTunes. As always, we really appreciate the reviews. It helps spread the word about what we're trying to do here at Option Alpha. So this review comes from Guamilla WD. He said, the best podcast and resource on options back on August 9th, 2017. So this one's a while back, but we do go back that far and read those and check them out. But he said, I have more than 20 years experience in the banking and finance industry, and this is by far the best podcast and resource on options. Kirk's really down to earth and helps understand options in its easiest, most sensible way possible. I like his approach. Simple, no nonsense, not trying to upsell you on stuff like most other people on the website. So we really appreciate that. Thank you so much for leaving a review. Like I've said a number of times, we get a lot of downloads on the podcast and we don't have as many reviews as we have downloads. So if you are listening to this podcast and you haven't left a review yet, please do so. Please take the extra couple, 2 minutes to leave us a review. It would truly mean the world to us and help spread the word about what we do here at Option Alpha.
And now our favorite part of the show, Trader Q&A, where we ask a question from one of our current members about options trading. Got a question you'd like to ask Kirk to answer live on the air? Just head on over to optionalpha.com/ask and hit the record button to leave a message. That's optionalpha.com/ask. And now, here's today's question.
Hi, Kirk. My name is Ken Glade. I'm from New Jersey, and I've been trading options since the end of 2017. My question is about the value of rolling a trade into a future month. I noticed in your podcasts, you are often saying we should take a non-emotional approach to trading, which I really appreciate. But I feel like rolling a trade to a future month is an emotional reaction trying to save a trade. Because aren't we really just closing a trade at a loss and opening another trade for the next month for a slight credit in the same underlying? And wouldn't it be a better use of the risk capital to find a trade in another underlying that produces more potential profit? Otherwise, it feels to me like we're just hanging on to that underlying just so that we can say we didn't have a losing trade in it. I'd like to hear your comments on that. Love your website. Just signed up for lifetime access. Looking forward to many years of trading success. Thanks, Kirk.
All right, so Ken, thank you so much for submitting your question. Also, thank you so much for being a lifetime member, supporting what we do here. So when it comes to rolling trades, I totally get what you're saying. I understand the concept and just the argument, I guess, to like, why do we even do this in the first place? Because rolling a trade to a future month, like you said, it could be just more of an emotional play. We're trying to boost our ego and say, yes, we made all these winning trades. But in my opinion, I think that rolling a trade versus closing it and opening up a new trade is effectively the same thing. So we've said a number of times before that rolling a trade and closing and opening a new one are one and the same. I agree with you that I think one thing you have to consider when rolling a trade is you have to consider how that trade fits into next month's portfolio. That's a big thing for me. And I say that in all honesty, because we've closed trades that we could have rolled for a credit because it didn't fit well into the next month's portfolio. We either already had a position in the next month, we either needed more bearish exposure, and this would give us more bullish exposure. So I think the real answer to this is that rolling a trade and opening and closing in the next month are all one and the same. Your analogy about looking for something that fits well into the new portfolio in the new month is wonderful, because that's what it should be. Your rolling position is an extension of this month. And you have to answer the question, do I want to extend this position to the next month? And if you simply want to extend the position just to have a winning trade and there's better opportunities, that's not a smart trading decision. If there's better implied volatility trades, if there's better positions that can more neutralize and balance your portfolio, then you're best served to extend or to close the trade off, cut it for a loss, and open the new position that's better, right? If there's something new and better in the next month, you need to go after that. All that being said, most of the time when we make trades, we are making trades with a lot of cash available. So for us personally, we generally are of the opinion that we will roll and extend trades as needed because we have a lot of cash available. We don't over allocate our accounts and we have enough time to let things come back around. So I'm also of the opinion, while yes, having a trade that could work better someplace else is great, simply because we have cash and we have the means to roll trades and keep duration going as long as possible is an effective way to extend the trade timeline. Whereas we would have entered a trade, say, 30 days out, now we have the opportunity effectively to make the same trade 60 days out. It just so happens that we have to break it up between the two contract months. To me, it's still the same trade. If I could have traded something 90 days out, but I chose to do it 30 days, then roll it, then roll it, then roll it, it's effectively the same trade as trading 90 days out and waiting the whole time period to get it. So when I look at trades like that, I think to myself, yes, I want to make sure that our portfolio can handle it. It fits well within the next month's portfolio. But at the same time, if I have the cash, I have the patience to let the trade go. And if I'm getting paid to reduce risk, which is the most important thing, I'm not just simply rolling for a debit or rolling for net zero credit. I'm actually getting paid to reduce risk. Then I'll usually take that trade and let the trade go on another month. I think that's a real key differentiator as well. So hopefully it helps answer your question. Again, if you guys have any other questions you want to get answered here on the podcast or on Facebook, as we've been doing on our Facebook Lives, please head on over to optionalpha.com/ask, just like Ken did. Click the big red button in the middle of the screen and leave me a private voicemail. Again, there's no software to download or install. It comes right to me. It's very easy to do. You can do it in 5 minutes or less, and we really appreciate it because we use all of these as the basis for how we get these questions for the podcast. All right, so let's dive into the closing bell segment where we're going to discuss a new trade that we're making today in TLT.
Now, the closing bell. Find out which stocks we're looking at right now, trades we're making, and hear our game plan moving forward.
All right, so today we're going to be talking about a new position that we got into in TLT. TLT is a good old friend of ours. We trade TLT quite often. It is the 20-year bond ETF from iShares. Very liquid, adds a lot of diversity to the portfolio. We like trading a lot. And we actually got into our third laddered entry in TLT today. And this is why I want to talk about it on the podcast, because I think it's incredibly important to kind of talk through these things as we're doing them. You can watch them on video updates and video reviews once they go live to the public, but it's really important when we talk about the concept of laddering, spreading positions out, breaking positions down into multiple entries, that we kind of go through the process. And I think this is a really cool little mini case study, if you will, on how we did that. So our first position in TLT was actually at the 143 strikes, and we got into the 143 strikes back on September 23rd. So at the time, TLT was around the 143 level, had decent implied volatility, actually still has pretty decent implied volatility. And we got into our initial position by selling the 143 iron butterfly and just doing two contracts. So we just did two contracts. We could have done more, but why do we do two contracts? Well, it gets back to the old classic strategy that we have of just breaking out our entry into multiple entries or ladders, like rungs on a ladder. So I always talk about, you know, you can't get from the bottom of a house to the top of a house by just jumping from the bottom rung to the top rung, right? You need small incremental steps. Well, that's what we like to do with our option trades as well. Small positions all the time, frequently distributed over different strike prices, creates a nice broad position in the portfolio. So that first position that we got into in TLT was at the 143 strike, and we did two contracts. Well, a little bit later on, when TLT started to actually move higher at the time, we got into our second position, and the second position was added on 10-4. So about a week and a half, 2 weeks later, we got into our second position. That was centered at the 146 strike. So as TLT was moving higher, we grabbed the 146 strike and added another two contracts. Now, today, TLT has actually come all the way back around, has come all the way back down to around 140. So now we are trading the 140 centered iron butterfly. And this is why I like to do laddered entries, because in this case, TLT has been all over the map as we've been building out this position. However, we have a nice broad, basically looks like the combined position looks like a big wide iron butterfly going in TLT. So now we're adding our third series of ladder contracts in TLT. We're selling the at the money strikes at 140 and then buying options really far out on either end, 152 calls and the 129 puts, and buying those options really cheap, 7 cents and 9 cents respectively, for a $4.15 credit overall. So again, we're just getting into two. This will be our third and last laddered entry in TLT. So at this point, we've got a good position here. We've basically allocated as much as we want to allocate for November expiration, and we have a nice position, and we'll start managing each of these positions independently. But I thought it was good to go through kind of the specifics here a little bit, just a brief overview of how we got into this laddered entry, how we kind of moved and shifted around. We're basically just following the market and adding new positions every time it moves. So market moves up, add a new position. Market moves down, add a new position. And we're not just doing it in TLT, obviously. We're doing it in all of our core tickers and ETFs that we trade, and trying to spread our positions out so that, you know, no one particular position becomes really detrimental to us moving forward. So we'll manage each of these as independent little iron butterflies, take them off when they each respectively hit their profit targets, and deal with and adjust the ones as we get closer to expiration that need a little bit more help.
Thanks for listening to the Option Alpha podcast. If you liked what you heard, please drop by iTunes and leave a rating or comment. Plus, you can get everything: free email updates for future shows, transcripts, video tutorials, case studies, and more. Just visit our website at optionalpha.com.
All right, so I truly hope you guys enjoyed today's show, and as always, got at least one thing out of it that you can apply right now to make you a smarter, more profitable trader and investor. And as always, you can get additional resources, links mentioned in the show, and some related video training from today's show by going to optionalpha.com/show166. Again, that's just the number 166, optionalpha.com/show166. And until next time, happy trading.